woman once played professional baseball, but it has been a long time. Though they have made major strides in college athletics of all kinds, they have yet to make an appearance on the field of dreams. Here to discuss the history of women in baseball is Talking History's Eileen Dugan and her guest, Gabe Berlage.
Every now and then in the national news, there appears a story of a woman playing baseball. We're told about how she hits as well as a man, how she struck out the side in the third, how her teammates accept her. And then she vanishes, leaving us to wonder whether women will ever be accepted in what remains essentially a man's game. But why is this so? Is this effort by women to break into baseball merely a modern phenomenon? Or is this a continuation of a story as old as the game itself? With us to discuss women's participation in the American pastime is Dr. Gay Ingham Berlage, professor of sociology at Iona College. Dr. Berlage is the author of Women in Baseball, The Forgotten History. Hello, Dr. Berlage.
Hi, good to see you. Good to talk to you.
We tend to have the impression that women got the idea to start playing baseball as a result of the women's movement in the 60s and 70s, but you show that female participation in the sport is actually much older than that. I mean, when did women start playing baseball?
I think it's absolutely amazing that, you know, the majority of people think that baseball, women playing baseball is a new phenomenon, you know, really with the 70s, with Little League baseball. But women were playing almost as early as men. The women began playing baseball in 1866, and men really were introduced to the game during the Civil War. So women were some of the early players.
And how did all of this playing baseball conflict with the Victorian notion of woman?
Well, I think that's fascinating because the last group of women that you think would be playing baseball would be the Victorian, you know, the true woman who was envisioned as frail and in need of protection. They were treated like porcelain dolls and handled with special care, and certainly strenuous exercise was verboten. It was feared that if they did exercise, that not only would it endanger their health, but they wouldn't be able to have children. So that the idea of Victorian women playing baseball seems anathema. We have this image of, you know, the Victorian woman with her smelling salts on the parlor sofa. But what happened was that we had immigration coming into the United States, and these immigrant women were able to do heavy labor and still seem to be robust and be healthy. And so there were early women's colleges were formed, and the people that formed these early women colleges, Seven Sisters like Smith and Vassar and Wellesley, believed that maybe in order for a woman to have a healthy mind, she also needed a healthy body. And so they introduced calisthenics. Well, the girls didn't like calisthenics at all, and they saw their brothers, and baseball was very popular at that time in the United States, and so they suggested that, hey, maybe we could play, you know, just some baseball. And the educators weren't too happy with the idea, but they figured any kind of exercise the girls were willing to do was better than nothing. And so baseball sort of accidentally slipped into the curriculum.
And did they play amongst themselves, or did they play the boys' colleges? What did they do?
Well, no, I think there were still very much, you know, restrictions. I think even the founders of these very progressive women's colleges worried that the public might not take kindly to the girls playing baseball. So they told them they had to play far from the road so that nobody could see them, and that, you know, men were not allowed to come on campus and watch the games. They pretty much either played in their physical education classes, or they played, you know, between different dorms on campus, or the freshmen played the sophomores. So it was an informal sort of baseball curriculum.
But ultimately, these teams vanished, and sometimes without a trace, you noticed. Why was that so?
What happened is really during the 1930s, softball became popular, and the Softball Association actually officially took on the name of softball, and they applied that softball term to the modified baseball games that girls had been playing previously. You have another phenomenon. In 1926, Gladys Palmer published a modified set of rules for girls' baseball with shorter base paths. And so, then the Women's Physical Education Association accepted that as more appropriate for girls because it wasn't as rough as the boys' game. And I think culturally then, because there was sort of this conflict between, you know, girls playing men's sport of baseball, that after a while it just became assumed that girls had never played baseball, that these modified baseball games that they had played were really the precursors of softball. And so this whole history of women's baseball was easily forgotten.
And not only were they playing baseball in colleges, but there were also women's pro and semi-pro teams being developed early in the 20th century. How would you describe them?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably about in the 1870s. I mean, you had promoters that wanted to make a quick buck, and here was a novelty. Here was something that they could really sensationalize. I mean, could you believe that the woman could be out there playing baseball? And so some of these promoters hit on the idea that, you know, we'll have some women, we'll just get some women and have them play baseball and the crowds will come. One of the earliest of these were the Blondes and Brunettes, were in 1875, where a promoter just got together 9 women that were blondes and 9 women that were brunettes and set them out on the field. At first, this did bring the crowds, but then after a while, by the 1990s, the novelty of just having women players wasn't enough. The women actually had to begin to play, and they wanted to see women with serious baseball skills. So by the 1890s, you're getting really wonderful women's barnstorming teams that are playing against men's teams, and they're able to beat some of these amateur and semi-pro men's teams. One of the earliest of these is Franklin's Young Ladies Baseball Club of 1890 to 1891. And the team played in these long dresses with polka dot scarves, and they were beating many of the men's teams. And this was phenomenal. Today, we think that probably what Franklin did is he cheated a little bit, and a couple of those, or maybe more, of the women on the team were actually men dressed in dresses.
Including Roger Hornsby?
Yeah, what I think was absolutely fascinating is that men would find the Bloomer Girls teams, which were in the 1890s to about 1935, which was a generic term for these women's teams that played against men's teams. So you had the Chicago Bloomer Girls, the Texas Bloomer Girls, Boston Bloomer Girls, Indianapolis Bloomer Girls, etc. And very often these Bloomer Girls teams in the early days would have one or two or maybe even 3 men that played on the team in dresses, and then later, of course, they were playing in regulation men's uniforms and were recognized. But 2 major leaguers, Smokey Joe Wood of the Boston Red Sox, the pitcher, who was declared the best pitcher in the Major League Baseball in 1912, got his start playing Bloomer Girls baseball, and then Rogers Hornsby of the St. Louis Cardinals, who was the 1924 Major League batting champion, also got his start playing Bloomer Girls baseball. And I can't conceive of a man today wanting to play on a women's team.
Especially dressed as a woman sometimes.
Oh, I know. That's even more amazing. And yet, there are articles that you'll find, like in a Tennessee newspaper or something, where some father has put an ad in the paper and said he's looking for his son, Earl, who he thinks he's run off and joined a Bloomer Girls team. So, I mean, boys were running off to join these Bloomer Girls baseball teams because it was exciting, it was fun. They got paid well, and it was like running off to join the circus.
Now, did women also ever get to play in men's professional leagues?
Yes, they did. I think, again, you know, very often more as a gimmick or more as a novelty. The earliest of those was Lizzie Arlington, who pitched for the Philadelphia Reserves in 1898, and she earned $100 a week, which was a lot of money, because they expected that the crowds would come out for this novelty of a woman. The crowds didn't materialize. But Ed Barrow of the Atlantic League then hired her to pitch in some minor league exhibition games. But she was sort of fizzled out. The first one that really was able to make baseball a professional career was Lizzie Murphy, and she played from 1918 to 1935. And we could call her really a professional baseball player. She started out with amateur teams in Warren, Rhode Island, where she lived, and then played for men's semi-pro and professional teams. But most of her career was spent with Eddie Carr's All-Stars, which was a semi-pro team that barnstormed across the United States and Canada playing baseball for money. And she played first base and was billed as the queen of baseball. And Eddie Carr's All-Stars had ex-major leaguers on the roster. So it was very competitive baseball. And she also goes down in history as the first woman to have played against a major league team. In August of 1922, she played first base for the American All-Stars against the Boston Red Sox in Fenway Park. It was a benefit game, but still, she played with the major leaguers.
And at one point, there was a woman who struck out Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig.
Yeah, that's a fascinating story. And probably some people have heard of Jackie Mitchell because it was so fascinating. In 1931, Jackie Mitchell was signed by Joe Engel, who was the owner and promoter of the Chattanooga Lookouts, a Class AA minor league team. And he was able to convince the the New York Yankees to play an exhibition game against his team. And in that, Jackie Mitchell came up and pitched against Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. And, you know, Babe tipped his hat at her and was very gallant. And all of a sudden, she had struck him out, and he's kicking the plate, and, you know, he's not such a gentleman anymore. And then Lou Gehrig came up, and she struck him out, too. Jackie claimed to her dying day that it was legitimate, that she had this really tricky sinker ball, and that's what had surprised him. But there were others that said that maybe it was a stunt, and it was a setup. Didn't matter, though. Baseball got pretty upset about it, and baseball commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis quickly ruled that women couldn't play baseball and that Jackie Mitchell could not continue to play for the Lookouts.
Now, why has there always been such great opposition to women playing baseball with men, or I guess I should say against men?
I think baseball has always been seen as a male domain. Basically, sports have been seen as a male domain, and baseball was the American sport. I mean, that was the early sport. It was originated here, and I think males have a real attachment to it. And maybe baseball is still seen as one of the last areas of male exclusivity, you know, where they can prove their superiority. I mean, they can't do it in business, they can't do it in politics, but maybe they have greater physical prowess, and this is, you know, their last chance, their last domain. And I think, therefore, there's been a fear that if you let women in, I mean, what if she really could compete with us?
Now, of course, many of us have seen the movie A League of Their Own about the women's teams in the 1940s and early 50s. I mean, how did this manage to succeed, this notion of women's professional teams at this time?
Well, I mean, certainly the wartime created a very different environment because you had so many men that were either drafted or volunteered to fight in World War II, and it was a very popular war. And what happened was that you needed now workers in the industrial, I mean, you know, in the war industry and just to carry on everyday life. So you had women now that went to work. You remember Rosie the Riveter as an example. And Wrigley also became concerned. He was afraid that Major League Baseball would have to close down because there wouldn't be enough ball players. And he decided that wouldn't it be wonderful if we had a women's league that played in these major league stadiums. And so he established the All-American Girls, actually he called it Softball League in 1943. But in order to make the game a little more exciting and a little more acceptable to the public, he added some baseball rules to the game, so a sort of a hybrid of softball and baseball. And then so that the women would be seen as really feminine and would appeal to the public, he made them wear short skirts and to go to charm school. So he had these lovely feminine ladies playing this masculine game of baseball, and it got tremendous publicity and drew large crowds.
And yet in the 1950s it folded. Why? And why didn't women fight harder to keep it going?
Well, what's interesting is actually the All-American Girls Baseball League reached its peak in 1948, which is several years after the war had ended. And at that time, about 1 million fans came out. And yet, by 1954, they could no longer sustain themselves and basically financially went under. I think a lot of that has to do with the changes that took place after the war. In the 1950s, we went back to this to a sort of a peacetime mentality that and a segregation of the sexes again, that women really should be full-time mothers and full-time housewives, and the men were the ones that would go out to work. So you had the sex role segregation, and also you had changing times in terms of there were lots of opportunities for other types of entertainment. You know, families went on picnics, and they went on trips, and you also had TV. And TV really cut into baseball in terms of that you could now watch your major league teams in your home, and you didn't have to go out to the ballpark. So many minor league teams had financial problems. It wasn't just the AAGBL, but the AAGBL then folded. But when it folded, Allington, who had been one of the coaches, really was very disheartened by this, and so he started the Allington's All-Americans, a barnstorming team made up of some of the best players from the Rockford Peaches and the Fort Wayne Daisies. And they actually barnstormed across the whole United States from about 1955 to 1957, when, again, it was just too expensive. They weren't making enough on these individual games to pay for the cost of travel and then to have some money left over. So they folded.
Okay. Well, of course, now we have girls playing Little League baseball occasionally. How is that a success story in terms of women playing baseball?
No, I don't think it is at all, unfortunately. Girls won the legal right to play Little League Baseball in 1974, and it was a hard-fought battle. But what Little League quickly did was establish Little League's softball, and I think most girls today are playing softball rather than baseball. And I think that's a cultural thing, that culturally in the United States, softball has been seen as sort of the equivalent of baseball for girls.
We only have a moment remaining, but I just want to ask this question. Does it really matter that women have had such a difficult time breaking into professional baseball alongside men? I mean, one thinks of Brian Gumbel's famous line of, is nothing sacred?
Well, I certainly don't think that we have to think that baseball has to remain a male domain. And if women want to compete and if women want to play baseball and they like the game, there's no reason why they should be barred. They should be able to go out and play, you know, Little League Baseball, junior high school baseball, and then if they want to and they have the skills, go on to professional baseball. The problem, I think, is today not so much even men as the problem with women. Parents need to, if they want their daughters and their daughters want to play baseball, they need to encourage them to play Little League Baseball and not Little League Softball. They need to encourage them to continue to play baseball and to play in junior high school and high school and then go on to college baseball. If they don't, if we want softball then to be the sport, well, then that's going to occur. But we're not going to see this change unless we get, you know, thousands of little girls playing baseball. If not, then the culture isn't going to change and softball will continue to be seen as the girls' equivalent of baseball. And if that's the case, well, then that's the case.
Well, thank you, Dr. Verlage. We've been talking with Dr. Gabe Verlage, professor of sociology at Iona College, author of Women in Baseball, The Forgotten History.
Third base tribulation, if you pass you